Again to badquaker.com podcast. My name is Ben Stone. Today is Tuesday, June 12th, 2012. What we're looking at here is, I'm getting ready to go to Pork Fest up in New Hampshire, the New Hampshire Porcupine Liberty Festival, and we're in the process of trying to get the motorhome in condition to take that kind of a trip. It's a rather old motorhome, so we have to baby it. And we have some problems with the brakes and stuff. I have to try to get all this taken care of. And I'm running really short on time. I've got a bunch of obligations that I'm having a hard time seeing how I'm going to fulfill all those obligations between now and when I have to leave for Porkfest. And in addition to that, there's a lot of things that we have planned for Porkfest. So there's a lot of preparations we have to get done, and I'm running drastically short on time to get all these obligations out of the way. So I think I'm not saying for certain, but I think this is going to have to be my last podcast for this week, and hopefully I can get up to New Hampshire and get everything set up, and I'm hoping to be on with Freedom Fiends live on this coming Sunday, and possibly the next Sunday. But if everything goes the way that I want it to go, I should be in New Hampshire. Maybe I can put together a podcast on Saturday or Sunday, early Sunday, and get that posted. But in all likelihood, this will be my last podcast for this week. Now, once we get to the campground in New Hampshire, they tell me that there's an internet connection there. But I suspect that once we get, however many campers there are there, I'm thinking 1,800 people trying to log on to their Wi-Fi at the same time, I strongly suspect my internet connection is not going to be what I'm used to. So it may be possible to get podcasts done while I'm in New Hampshire at Porkfest, but it may also be impossible, and I may have to just record them and then play them the following week. So there's a possibility that this may be the last podcast for almost 2 weeks, or that may not be true. So I don't know one way or the other. I'm hoping to be able to continue podcasting while in New Hampshire, and it would be nice if I could get a couple more podcasts out this week before I leave for New Hampshire. But I want to give that disclaimer out just in case. This may be the last one for this week. If so, I apologize. I wish I could do more, but the physical restraints of time and space only allow so much. And I forgot where I put my book of magic, so I can't twist time and space like I'd like to. Now, to jump right into something, well, let me give you an idea of what I'm going to do today, because this is going to be a little different than what I normally do. I'm going to attack a topic that I rarely get anywhere near, and then, after that, I'm going to go back to a topic that I've put a lot of effort on here lately. And that is the world of Ron Paul. Now, everyone is not already sick of hearing all that, but if you are, stick with me, because this is going to be I'll explain. If you're not tired of Ron Paul yet, then maybe I can help you become more tired of Ron Paul. What I'm going to do is, I'm going to start talking a little bit about conspiracy theories here, and then after I get done talking about conspiracy theories, I'm going to play a couple of extended clips from previous podcasts. Now, the first two are going to be strictly about Ron Paul and things that I've said, leading up to to the big Rand Paul announcement from last week. So two clips are going to be about that. And then one clip is going to be a piece of an old podcast of Kai and myself from way back in December. And we're going to kick around the Ron Paul topic a bit, but we're going to talk about a lot of other things as well. And the reason I'm putting on the podcast, the old podcast with Kai and myself, is because if all goes well in New Hampshire, Kai will meet me up there, and along with other people that are part of the Bad Quaker staff. And if all goes well, she will be assisting me in podcasts coming from the Porcupine Fest up there in New Hampshire. So I thought it would be good to, you know, some of the newer listeners have actually never even heard Kai on the podcast. So I thought it would be good to give a little bit of a reminder of how Kai and I work together when we are podcasting together. So that's the rundown. So I'm going to do a little bit of conspiracy theory stuff, and then I'm going to do two clips. One from, the first one will be from May of 2012, talking about Ron Paul and talking about being fooled by politicians. And then I'm going to do a clip from March 13th, actually, talking about the Ron Paul bubble and my predictions, where I basically described exactly what took place last Thursday, Friday, Saturday in that time frame, but I predicted it in March. And then I'll play, to top the thing off, I'll play the clip at the end with from the podcast with Kai from back in December. So, and there's going to be jokes in the one from December that are not going to make any sense, but unless you were following along in the podcast's day-to-day back at that time. But I'll try to, you know, narrow it down so that most of that's cut out of it. So, okay, so let's hit the conspiracy theories first. And what I want to bring up here is I want to make a distinction of, how do I say this and not get fogged with 10,000 hate emails? Let's look at it this way. There are a lot of things. Okay. I know how we can look at it. I'm not a fan of Jesse Ventura. Okay, he irritates me very badly, and the fact that he calls himself a Navy SEAL when he was never actually in the Navy SEALs, and the fact that real Navy SEALs don't, well, very few Navy SEALs actually call him out on that. There are a few who have pointed it out. He was never in the Navy SEALs. He was in the 60s, during the Vietnam War, he was referred to as a frogman, which was not a Navy SEAL at the time. They did underwater things like welding. Now, some frogmen also did underwater demolition stuff, but that's very different from what Navy SEALs were doing at the time, and that's very different from what Navy SEALs do today. Jesse Ventura, when he calls himself a Navy SEAL or refers to himself in that way, I want to grind my teeth, because he's putting upon himself titles that he does not deserve. Now, having said that, I always have to give the Jesse Ventura disclaimer, because he irritates me so bad. But now, having said that, even if you have a sewer, there's water in it, and that water contains contaminants that you don't necessarily want to consume. But even in that sewer, there is something good, which is water. So I don't know if that's a very good way to explain my feelings about Jesse Ventura by comparing him to a sewer. But he's definitely full of a lot of what you might find in a sewer. So I guess that is a good comparison. So let's jump off of that, and let me say why I'm bringing up Jesse Ventura. He has stated that in defense of conspiracy theory, in defense of people who pursue conspiracy theories, he has talked about how many things that were once considered just crazy, radical, completely conspiracy theory nuts, you know, completely discredited, and then later on it turns out, well, you know what, that was true. And some of the examples he gives are things like Operation Northwoods. Now, for a long time, Operation Northwoods was completely denied. And it was hinted, and people, you know, thought something like that was the case, but it was totally denied. And then as time progresses, we find out that Operation Northwoods was a legitimate proposal that people within the government really wanted to do. And you can, I'm not going to make a big deal over Operation Northwoods. You can look that up. Wikipedia has a really good article on it. But essentially what Operation Northwoods suggested to the president was that in order to demonize the Fidel Castro regime in Cuba, that false flag operations could be committed within the United States, where agents, primarily of the CIA, would actually kill Americans and blow up things and commit acts of terrorism within the United States for the purpose of discrediting Cuba. They would commit these horrible acts of terrorism in the United States and blame it on Cuba, and that would give an excuse to take the U.S. to war against Cuba. Crazy, huh? Yeah, but they actually presented this to the president, and they attempted to get him to sign on to it. That was President Kennedy. Now, for the foil hat wearers, it wasn't long after Kennedy told them no and shut down the processes and said, we're not going to do anything like that. And then Kennedy's dead. So the conspiracy theory person, the person who tends towards conspiracy theories, is looking at two different things here. One is a conspiracy theory that is absolutely confirmed. They really did have plans to commit acts of terrorism on U.S. soil and blame it on foreigners for the purpose of being able to invade another country. They actually did that. They planned it. They didn't commit the acts that we know of, but they planned it. And this is confirmed, and you can, like I said, you can go to Wikipedia and look it up if you want to. Now, does that have anything to do with President Kennedy being killed? Well, one can only speculate in that direction, and there we come into the foil hat people and all the different theories that might come up with. Now, there's some really strange things about the death of John F. Kennedy and the death of other people who were involved right around that same time frame. There's some really strange things. And it's really hard, the more you look at it, and it's not just the stuff like in the Oliver Stone movie that was all goofy and half made up anyway, but there are real things that a person can get into and read about, and it really starts to make you wonder, and it really starts to make you think, well, what really was going on? You know, Kennedy's longtime girlfriend that was assassinated right afterwards when she started, you know, bringing out information that she was going to reveal about John F. Kennedy. And then she, the way that she was murdered in the park in Washington, D.C., the whole thing is, the more you look into it, the worse it looks. So you have two different things there. You have a conspiracy theory that for a long time was believed to be stupid, craziness. We don't want to look at this. That's nutty. Only fools would believe something like that. And then it turns out to be true. And then we have layers and layers of conspiracy theories involving the death of John F. Kennedy. And it's either impossible or close to impossible to prove them, but we're stuck with the theories. Now, if you project that ahead and you look at some of the more, if we can say it this way, the more popular conspiracy theories nowadays are things like the 9/11 truther people, or the chemtrails topic. And my criticism in the past has been mostly, I don't talk about chemtrails much at all. I have taken swats at the 9/11 people on occasion. But it's not because I want to debunk them or attack them or anything. It's because the method that they use, the method that the 9/11 conspiracy people tend towards, is a method that, in the long run, it does more harm to their cause than good. And we're assuming, just for the sake of conversation, and I realize that here we are on the Liberty Radio Network, where part of the advertisement for the Liberty Radio Network is that we're not conspiracy nuts, okay? And so I'm not a conspiracy nut. I'm not a 9/11 truther. I'm not, you know, I'm no kind of conspiracy theories like that at all. On the other hand, I don't put anything past the evils of government. I realize, just like with what I was talking about, the Operation Northwoods there, if you can think of something more horrible or wretched or crazy than to think that the CIA would seriously offer to the President of the United States a program where the CIA would intentionally murder U.S. citizens on U.S. soil and blame it on foreigners for the purpose of getting the United States into a war. If you just think about that, and then you think to yourself, and that's been proven. That's actually admitted by the government that this was the case. Then your mind, unless you're really, really buying into the Kool-Aid of the state, your mind has to go to the next logical step, which says, well, if there are elements in the government who would offer this to a president in the early 60s, how could you assume that there were no other elements in the government that would offer something like this? Now, if you let's jump in a different direction. There's a book called A Century of War by John Denson, and it's a really good little book. I love this book. I've read it several times. My problem with reading this book is that I've heard John Denson's voice so many times that when I start to read one of his writings or I read like his book, I'm stuck reading it. In my mind, I hear his voice, and he has this slow Southern gentleman's voice with a proper Southern pronunciation on everything. And his voice is so soothing and so wonderful that I'm stuck reading at the pace that he speaks, which means that it takes me about four times longer to read one of his books than something from a different author. But that beside the point, in reading the book A Century of War, if you just focus on the events that he lays out in the preparation for the war between the states, if you go through, and he documents everything, and if you go through in that book and you read the levels of effort that Lincoln made in order to manipulate the South into firing on Fort Sumter, and you look through that, you look at the documentation, and you realize the levels of deception that were used and the levels of intimidation on Northern newspapers and on Northern politicians, and you realize exactly how evil the upper parts of government can be, to the point of killing hundreds of thousands of people. That's what happened as a result of Lincoln's manipulations and his conspiracies in order to get the South to fire on Fort Sumter. When you realize that hundreds of thousands of Americans were killed because Lincoln conspired to put the South into a position where they had no choice but to fire on Fort Sumter, then you start to wonder, okay, well, then you put that together with the Operation Northwoods, and you see the temptation that was given to John F. Kennedy while he was still alive. And then, if you want to follow through, you start reading about Franklin Roosevelt and what he was doing to build up a situation where Japan had absolutely no choice but to attack Pearl Harbor. When you start to see the levels of conspiracy that have been proven against Franklin Roosevelt, and then you start to do the same thing looking at the Spanish-American War, and you start to think about what happened with all the preparations for war and all the pushing that was done by a very small group of people to get the U.S. into the Spanish-American War. And the same thing with World War I. You start to see these things, and you start to get to the point of where you can't help but to wonder if maybe there's a little something to all this conspiracy stuff. Now, contrast that with some of the things that the 9/11 truthers will throw at you. If you only focus on Building 7 with the 9/11 incident, and you say, okay, here's what we have. We have a building that was not struck by an aircraft. There was no jet fuel sprayed into it at a high speed. There was no building. You know, Building 7 was a skyscraper, yes, but nowhere near in the range of the two main towers. So the pancaking effect that you saw in the two main towers could not take place in Building 7. And you start adding these things together, and then you realize that Building 7, it was announced over the television that Building 7 had collapsed long before Building 7 collapsed. And then you take all that and look at the actual footage of Building 7 collapsing and the little puffs of smoke coming out windows in different locations, all simultaneous and all happening exactly like a controlled demolition. And you really have a pretty good argument that something took place. But the 9/11 truthers have a tendency not to go in that direction. What they want to do instead is they want to take you in all kinds of other directions and tell you all kinds of things that are really difficult to explain and really difficult for the average person to understand. And so what you have is, you have your best argument with Building 7, and the vast majority of the 9/11 truther people do not utilize that wonderful tool to their advantage. What they want to do instead is they want to tell you about all kinds of crazy theories that involve the Twin Towers. Or they want to tell you about rockets instead of planes and photoshopping, and they get into this whole thing that's really difficult to believe. I'm not saying it's not true. I'm saying it's really difficult to believe. And they start tying in George Bush, and they start tying in Bill Clinton and all these other things. And you lose most of your audience when you really go over the top. So, for instance, let's take it back to the Northwoods thing, or let's take it back to Abraham Lincoln. If you just walk up to the average person who's been taught high school history from government schools and you say to them, you know, Lincoln started the war. It was all Lincoln's fault. He had no desire whatsoever to free the slaves, and he had actually promised he had said openly he had no desire whatsoever to free the slaves and promised he wouldn't do that. And yet he baited the South into attacking him. He actually forced them into a situation where they had no choice but to attack, and the slavery was just a side issue. If you say that to the average high school educated, government high school educated person, they're going to look at you like you're nuts. Well, that's the same thing that the 9/11 truthers have to deal with. If you throw at them the most blunt part of your argument, if that's what you're throwing at the public, they're not going to believe you. But if you go more subtly and you start bringing about side evidence, and you get them to begin thinking in the direction you want them to think, then you can begin showing them, in the case of the 9/11 truthers, you can begin showing them that something's fishy with the story. And once you can get that doubt planted into their mind, then you can take them further into conspiracy and show them what you're trying to say. All right, now I said all that to say this. I can generally deal pretty good with the 9/11 truther people. But the people that are hard to deal with on this topic is the chemtrail people. Here's where all the hate mail is going to come at me. I would like to believe lots of the chemtrail stuff. As a matter of fact, there's solid evidence that the governments, at least of the U.S. and of the U.K., have admitted that they have sprayed both chemicals and biological agents on their on the public. They have admitted this, that they did this in the 50s for experimentation purposes to see how the wind would drift things, and they've said this before. Kai and I talked about it on a previous podcast, and the links were all there and everything like that. But here's the problem. Now, when you start to tell somebody that those things that they see up in the sky are chemtrails and not vapor trails, we start to get into some problems. I was given a video to look at that's over on YouTube. It's called "Why Is Aluminum in the Rainwater, Geoengineering and Chemtrails?" And it's supposed to be just, this is evidence you can't ignore. You have to take it, right? Okay, so I listened to the whole thing and I watched all the way through it twice. Here's the problem. I boil the whole argument down to the following things. There's lines in the sky. They crisscross and form grid patterns. That's one. Two, they remain in the sky too long. Three, there's a local drought. Four, they've tested the rainwater. Five, nano-sized aluminum is what they're alleging is in this in these chemtrails. Nano-sized aluminum, and it crosses over through the out of the bloodstream into the brain, and it causes all these bad things. This is what they say in the movie. And next, the orange and red skies at sunset are due to the chemtrails. Now, okay, each one of those I'm going to touch real quick here. One, the lines that crisscross and form grid patterns. Well, you're assuming that planes don't fly in crisscross patterns, and that's a really big assumption. First off, from the ground. Now, I'm saying this having a lot of experience in aviation, spending many, many years in the field with my with many of my family members as pilots. I was never a licensed pilot, but I have flown my dad's plane lots of times. And, you know, I've been around aircraft basically my whole life. And I can say this is an absolute fact. You cannot stand on the ground and determine what the elevation is of two different planes that you're looking at the same time in the air, much less planes that fly past each other, you know, 15 minutes or an hour apart. It is absolutely impossible to stand on the ground and tell the elevation of a plane. You can't do it. There's so many factors involved that it's just not possible to stand on the ground and tell the elevation of a plane. As a matter of fact, you can be in a plane and look at another plane that's in the sky near you, and it's still hard to tell the elevation of that other plane. Unless you are really talented, and even then you're not going to get anywhere within thousands of feet of the actual elevation of that plane. There's just too many factors involved in vision to try to do that. So the idea that planes don't crisscross each other or plane, you know, all of that is illegitimate to anybody who knows anything about aviation. Now, the next thing is that these chemtrails are supposedly, you can tell that they're chemtrails and not vapor trails because of how long they stay in the sky. Well, again, anyone who's spent very much time in aviation knows that that's just not the case. I have been at test cells where we have engines set up on mounting, you know, on big mounts where they sit there and they run the engine and then they put it through different circumstances to see what they can see how the engine is affected by different things and so forth. And when I worked for General Electric Aircraft Engines, I've been at test cells where they were out in the Ohio, in the forests of Ohio. There's a big General Electric testing facility. And GE owns huge acreage out here in southern Ohio. And you can set up an engine and start to run a test on an engine. And according to what the weather is like, according to what the barometric pressure is, according to what the humidity is, according to what the temperature is, you can fire off an engine and fill a valley with fog instantly, and it stays for hours. Now, that's just a fact, and you can like it or not like it, but when an engine takes ambient air and compresses it and dumps it full of fuel and fires off that fuel and throws it out the back end, you have changed the temperature and the pressure and all the characteristics of that air so dramatically. And it all depends on all these different factors of the air. So and not only that, but our atmosphere is made of layers and layers and layers of constantly changing temperatures and pressures. Our atmosphere is not one continuous thing from the ground to the sky. It changes constantly and in different places. So the air is moving around back and forth, and each layer is a different temperature, and each layer is a different pressure. And pilots understand this. So when you make the argument that you can tell it's a chemtrail because of how long it lasts, anybody who's been around a lot of engine testings, or anybody who's flown a lot, or you know anybody in the industry knows that that's just not a legitimate argument. You can have a vapor trail that comes off the plane that you're flying, that remains after you've landed and look up and see it. So you can't tell a pilot or a person in aviation who's had a lot of experience, you can't use that as proof of your conspiracy theory. It doesn't work. We know better than that. Now, I'm not saying that there's no spraying. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you're going to tell me that they're spraying, present me with some real actual evidence of it. Don't just tell me it's your opinion that this one vapor trail lasted too long in the sky. That's simply not an argument. Okay, local drought. Well, using a local drought as an excuse, well, droughts come and go in all geographic areas and every year. Now, some areas have droughts for long times and some areas don't. That's a completely illegitimate argument. To try to say that the government is manipulating the weather just by pointing to something and saying, here's a local condition, there's proof. Well, you're not presenting any proof. There has to be a cause and effect in order for you to present a logical pattern for a person to believe. You know, there's an old saying that if you're going to make a radical statement, you have to have some radical support for that statement. Okay, need to get through these real quick because I have to break for commercial. Rainwater testing. So in this movie the name of the movie is Why is Aluminum in the Rainwater, Geoengineering and Chemtrails? And then they just say, oh yeah, they tested the rainwater and there's aluminum in it. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is, first off, they don't actually present any of the evidence in that video. They just say they did it. So if you're going to present evidence like that, what you need to do is have a double-blind study, and you need to have it verified by neutral parties. So if I'm going to make a statement that there's aluminum in the rainwater or any other chemical in the rainwater, then I need to be able to prove how I took my sampling, have it witnessed as to how the sampling was done, and have more than one sampling take place so that we can have a double-blind testing to know that the results are real and not assumed ahead of time by the researchers. But they don't do that. Now, the next thing is the nano-sized aluminum. And then they say, okay, so it's nano-sized aluminum, but in the same video, they show close-ups of what they say are aluminum particles that have settled from the rainwater. Well, if there are nano-sized particles of aluminum, then just dumping them through the rainwater is not going to – they won't reform into actual chunks of aluminum. So it's either one or the other. It's either flakes of particle sizes, or it's nano-sized. If it's nano-sized, you're not going to see it. So which is it? Are they putting out giant flakes of aluminum, or are they putting nano size? Your argument is self-contradictory. Okay, and then the last thing is that they said in the movie was orange and red skies at sunset are due to these chemicals. Really? Well, I wonder what, there's an old ancient saying among sailors, red sky at night, sailor's delight, red sky in the morning, sailor's warning. Now, where that comes from is that you can see weather patterns and you can tell east to west by the movement, and by the way, that phrase only works in the northern hemisphere, because the tendency of the weather patterns move mostly from west to east in the northern hemisphere. Therefore, if there's a red sky at night, then there's a storm coming your way. But if there's a red sky in the morning, then the storm has passed you and you've got smooth sailing, so to speak. Now, that's a very, very, very old saying of the sea. And so what are you going to tell me, that they were spraying chemtrails back in the days of ancient Rome and so forth in order to come up with phrases like that? Were they spraying back in Columbus's day when he was using that kind of a standard for determining what the weather was going to be like? There are all kinds of things in the air to change. Have you ever seen a rainbow? A rainbow's got a lot of different colors. And what is a rainbow? A rainbow is light going through water particles in the air and bending the light so that we can see colors. Well, that's all the colors in the sky are caused by light going through and bending. So, this is almost insultive to tell me that the orange and red skies at night are due to chemtrails. Now, I'm not saying that the government is not spraying anything. I'm saying that if you're going to make these arguments, you have to have some kind of legitimate evidence. These things like how long that the vapor trail is lasting too long, therefore it's proof. No, that's false. Anybody who has been around aviation very much knows that that's wrong. They crisscross patterns. Well, planes crisscross all the time. They go in different directions, in every kind of direction. Oh, they're in a pattern. There's five of them flying across the sky. Planes fly in patterns sometimes, especially military planes. Okay, I'm going to break off from this because I'm starting to get a little warmed up. I'm going to break off from this. We'll throw in a commercial or two, and we'll get right back, and I'll play some of the old stuff. How would you like to support BadQuaker.com and get something nice for yourself at the same time? I want to tell you about Survival Gear Bags. It's run by my friend Kelly, who believes in and adheres to the non-aggression principle. Kelly's customers know him for his great customer service and his personal touch, because Kelly handles all customer service himself. The main focus of Survival Gear Bags is to allow you to build your own custom emergency kits with quality gear. Now, I know this because I bought my bug out bag from Survival Gear Bags over 2 years ago, and I've gone all over the country with it by my side. And you can rest assured that the prices will always be the best they can be at Survival Gear Bags. And if you use the link from BadQuaker.com, they'll probably throw in something for free for you with your order. Now, how do you do this? Well, it's simple. You go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side of the page, click on the picture of the backpack. Then look around at Survival Gear Bags and find the stuff you want. You'll help BadQuaker.com, and you'll support a merchant that's one of us.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Okay, thanks for sticking with me through the break. Now the break is over, and I'm calmed down, and I can speak more clearly and not yell at the microphone. I may adjust my plan here. I may not. You know what? Let me just do this just in case, because I may run out of time. I have a tendency to destroy my time schedules. And like I've been told in emails and in other places, I tend to ramble a bit too much. So just in case, let me just mention a couple things. If you go to podcast number 150, which is May 23rd, and the title of that podcast is Being Fooled by Politicians. And if you listen to that podcast, that's one of the podcasts where I talked about, I predicted what was going to happen with Rand Paul last week, and I talked about being fooled by Ron Paul and allowing him to, really what I said in that podcast, in podcast 150, being fooled by politicians, is very similar to what Jack Hunter made the excuses for Rand Paul's betrayal of the movement. But Jack Hunter, in trying to make excuses for Rand Paul, basically says the same thing I said in that podcast 150, except he tries to spin it in a positive light. And what I show in podcast 150 was that this has been Ron Paul's plan right along. And that's my accusation in podcast 150, and I have, and I still stick with that. I think they planned this, not a conspiracy theory, an evil thing, or any. I think Ron Paul believes that this was a viable process, and I think it's part of his plan. And you can hear that in that podcast. You can go listen to it. I'm not going to play it today because I'm going to rant on about conspiracy theories, and I might get in the one. I might add in the one with Kai to fill in the end. But now the other podcast that to support what I'm saying in reference to Rand Paul and Ron Paul is from March 13th. It's podcast number 119, and it's called Consistent Libertarians and the Ron Paul Bubble. And specifically the last 10 minutes of that video, the last 10 minutes of that podcast, I talk specifically about the Ron Paul Bubble. The first, the first 50 minutes of the podcast, I talk about other things, but the last 10 minutes are specifically about the Ron Paul Bubble. and I directly predict what happened with Rand Paul last week. So you can check those out for yourself. I'll put links to them in today's show notes on badquaker.com. And you can check those out yourself if you're interested, but I won't make you listen to them today on the podcast. So if I have the time at the end of this rant, then I'll put on a chunk of the podcast from December 21st with Kai and I talking, and mostly just so that the newer listeners get a chance to hear Kai, and we can begin to all together be prepared to have Kai back on the show, hopefully, during Porkfest from New Hampshire. Okay, now let me get back to my rant on conspiracy theories, because now that I'm kind of wound up on that, I want to continue talking about it. Okay, and let me again give this disclaimer. I don't put it past the government. There's no evil that you can come up with that I would say, oh, the government wouldn't do that. If you consider what the Nazis did during their reign, and then realize this, and I'll put a link in today's show notes to what I'm about to say, so that it doesn't sound too awful crazy. But after World War II, when Germany was then divided up between the Soviet Union and the Western powers, and Eastern Europe was put into the hands of the Soviet Union, and there was a real mess going on in Europe. Now, again, we're talking about after World War II, after the Nazis were defeated, and when the U.S. and the U.K. and France and the Soviet Union basically divided up Eastern Europe and occupied Germany and Austria and all these different countries. During that time frame, there was horrible, horrible persecution of German nationals. And there was a rounding up, and there were concentration camps, and there were work camps that were literally every bit as bad as what the Nazis had done to the Jews. They were done against German people. Now, and again, I'll put a link to support this in the notes from today's badquaker.com podcast. But it's an absolute fact. You can get hints of this from things there was a movie called The Third Man. It was a Orson Welles movie, and it took place all in Vienna. And it's a classic film noir, and a really, really good movie. And if you watch that movie, now this was made contemporary to the time frame, if you watch that movie and you look at the fear of some of the people being portrayed in that movie, the fear of being handed over to the Russians because they knew what was going to happen. You see, the U.S. was in on that. The U.S. knew what the Russians were doing with the people that we were turning over to them. Well, not we, I wasn't there, but the U.S. knew what the Russians were doing, and the U.K. knew what the Russians were doing. But above and beyond that, on the Allied side of Germany, there were still concentration camps that German citizens were put into. Young people, children that had nothing to do with the Nazi regime whatsoever, were literally worked to death. And so, considering all of this that I'm saying, there's nothing you can tell me that the government is doing this evil thing here. And I'm not going to ever say I don't believe the government would do that, because I have looked at history enough and I have seen the atrocities of what supposedly good governments do to their people. I know this stuff. And so there's nothing you can tell me that a government has done that I'm going to say, well, that's too evil for a government to do. No, there's nothing too evil for a government. So when you tell me that the government is spraying poison into the air for the purpose of whatever, I'm not saying the government would never do that. I'm not saying the government is innocent or the government. I'm not saying any of those things. But what I'm saying is, if you're going to present an argument to me that this is what's happening, then you need to present an argument that's based on solid evidence that I don't look like a fool if I'm going to tell somebody about it. I was watching one Alex Jones-based video on YouTube. Actually, I clicked to it from the link that was on the one I mentioned earlier. And so it's an Alex Jones-based video, and they're talking along, and they're saying that that the trail, that you could tell that these some vapor trails were actually chemtrails because they start and stop. And that's so crazy that they start and stop. It's like the spraying is starting and stopping. Well, anybody who's flown very much knows what air pockets are, and they know that under some circumstances, you can be flying along, and the air temperature and pressure changes dramatically in one little spot, a pocket, and then you fly another 300 yards, and it changes back again. So if you're in a small plane and you hit one of these air pockets, it feels like a roller coaster because you literally drop a couple thousand feet in an instant. And because the air pressure has changed, so the aerodynamics of the plane doesn't have the same amount of lift that it did because the air pressure is different. So you're flying along in a small plane and you hit one of these air pockets and you drop a couple thousand feet. Or you shoot up a couple thousand feet. And then when you leave that air pocket, you drop again or you shoot back up again. And that's how these air pockets are when you're flying along. Well, when you're in a big plane and you're flying through an air pocket like that, it doesn't have the same dramatic effect that you have in a small plane. It pretty much just cruises right through them because you have so much more momentum and so much larger, the airfoil of your wings is so much larger that it doesn't affect it to the same degree as a smaller plane does. But even though you don't drop or shoot up like you do in a small plane, because the air pressure and the temperature has changed so dramatically, what your exhaust looks like changes. So there are air pockets. That's what causes those start and stops in a vapor trail. That's not proof that it's spraying anything. That's not proof it's not spraying anything. But if you're going to try to say something that's dramatic and make a strong accusation against the government, let's take it back to the Northwoods things. If it was 1965 and you're saying, hey, the government presented this idea to the CIA presented this idea to the president to kill Americans to try to get us into a war with Cuba, that's a pretty crazy statement. So you better have something to back it up. It doesn't matter that it's true. If you could transport yourself back to 1965 and start talking about the Northwoods operation, people would think you were crazy. It doesn't matter that it's true. They would still think you're crazy unless you have some kind of real evidence. If you don't have evidence, look for evidence. But don't just keep making crazy accusations without real live evidence. And to tell me that because a vapor trail starts and stops, that's evidence. No, it's not. I want real evidence. I want somebody who sprays to flip and say, yeah, this is what we're doing. I want somebody who is actually involved in this on camera or in documentation saying, you know, putting their reputation and bringing out documentation of this taking place. That's how we know Northwoods. That's how we know Northwoods actually was presented to the president, is because of documentation. Now the next thing they say on the Alex Jones video, it says, "Well, the planes were doing loops. The plane would go down," and they said loop. I think, you know, people who know anything about planes know that a loop is a loop, not just turning around. So I'm sure that the unknowledgeable people who were saying this on the video actually meant that they were just flying, you know, basically making a U-turn. I doubt that they actually meant that the plane made a loop, but they kept saying loop, which even adds more illegitimacy to their argument. I don't have to explain what a loop in aviation is, do I? Okay, so let's assume that what they're talking about is like a U-turn. So the plane made a U-turn, goes back and forth, and makes this crisscross pattern. Well, all the time that they're making this accusation that these planes supposedly, quote, loop, they're showing straight planes flying in a straight line. If these planes are doing this maneuver, why don't you have any film of them doing the maneuver? Why don't you have a film of them actually making this back and forth motion? All you have is the checkerboard vapor trails in the sky. But I'm telling you, planes fly according to the patterns that they're given to fly, and sometimes those crisscross each other. That's just the fact of how the planes fly through the air. Okay, and another thing they say in the video is this: they've got this old lady, and she's saying, "Well, the planes don't fly in the right direction. If the plane was flying in that direction, it would take too much fuel to get where it's going." This is the accusation. Well, I'm really comforted by the fact that you've got an old lady sitting on her porch telling me this because of her vast knowledge of air traffic control. See, if you're going to tell me that planes are not flying from destination to destination, then it's not that hard to get the information from air traffic controllers and actually document that. Now, let me take it back to the 9/11 people for a second. One of the accusations with the 9/11 truthers is that the one plane that supposedly crashed in Pennsylvania could not have crashed in Pennsylvania because using air traffic controller data, you can track that plane was over central Ohio when it disappeared. Now, let me just say that again, slightly different. When the 9/11 truthers are giving you their argument, one of the things they'll tell you is that it's documented by pilots that the plane that was supposedly crashed in Pennsylvania was actually in central Ohio at the time. And they have radio coordinates, they have the beep, where it was recorded, you know, that comes through as the plane flies along. They have all this actual documentation that pilots have done. Now, that's something that's kind of hard to look at, and it's hard to listen to qualified pilots explaining that and still hold it in your mind that the standard story about the crash in Pennsylvania is legitimate. So what are you going to do with this? What are you going to do with this information? You see, that's kind of hard to deal with. But the chemtrail people don't provide that to us. They have some lady on her back porch telling you that the planes are not flying the right patterns. Because she knows? Alex Jones is telling us that he knows that it's chemtrails because they don't evaporate quick enough. Because why? Because he has so many years flying? Because he is a qualified pilot? Because he has flown in airplanes and he knows these things? See, that's a vast amount of difference. Let me take it back to the Pennsylvania problem. I've seen a lot of airplane crashes. Where I worked at in GE, they would bring in the engines from crashes and forensically disassemble them and go through and try to find. They would look all the way to microscopic levels on engines that had crashed, that were in planes that had crashed. To take them right down to component level and microscopically examine them to make sure not only that we knew the reason for the crash to take place, but how the crash affected each component of that engine. The forensic details in a crash in a, that are used on an engine from a crash are amazing. And I have personally seen engines that were on planes that drove right into the ground at full speed. And so I know that there are large chunks of those engines that not only is the metal available, but the engine remains relatively intact, even in a direct impact into the ground. So then tell me, when you look at that crater, at all the very, very earliest of the news shots of that crater in Pennsylvania, having seen many engines from crashes and having seen many crash sites, I can say that thing in Pennsylvania does not look like an airplane crash site. It doesn't. I'm sorry, it just doesn't. And there are none of the major components of the engines that should have been right there visible. And the story is, well, they dug them up with backhoes weeks later or whatever, that they hit the ground so hard. Well, there's problems with a plane hitting the ground that hard. As a plane begins to dive, the plane itself, because of its bulk, can only get to a certain speed. It's called terminal velocity, the plane can only get to a certain speed. And when it begins to reach that certain speed, it'll pull its wings off. The friction of coming down that low to the ground will yank the wings right off of a plane. And then they don't hit with the kind of an impact that that you would expect from a plane. It as it begins to fly apart like that, it hits the ground with less impact than, say, a missile would. So there are real problems that the 9/11 people can use to say there are aspects of this story that don't make sense. You need to look at it. And if the chemtrail people really want me to seriously look at their argument, then they really need to come up with something that's based on real cold, hard facts, where you have real documentation from real experts in the field, not some old lady on the porch or not Alex Jones yelling at a microphone. Now, all that ranting and raving, and I don't have time to play the clip with Kai. Isn't that about right? I'm already breaking all the Liberty Radio Network rules here by bringing up a whole controversy on conspiracy theories, and not just one. You know, I'm smacking around Jesse Ventura and talking about, and let me just throw that out one more thing. The starting of the turning legitimate of the war in Vietnam, the way that took place with the Gulf of Tonkin incident, you can't honestly look at that and not see that a conspiracy took place, a conspiracy on the part of certain naval commanders that were there present at the time in conjunction with people like Robert McNamara. And whether or not Lyndon Johnson, whether or not it could be proved that he was in on it, or if he was just a dupe, Lyndon Johnson... And I'm saying this not because I just like to slam presidents, but from everything that I've seen, and I've listened to a lot of the White House recordings of Lyndon Johnson, and I've really kind of looked him over a bit, and I really have to say, Lyndon Johnson was quite stupid. And so to believe that he was really in on some kind of grand conspiracy to kill Kennedy, or he was in on some kind of grand conspiracy to get American troops actively fighting in Vietnam, I don't know. You know, I would just be just as satisfied to believe that he was a dupe of people that were around him that made a lot of money on the war in Vietnam. And and he was just too dumb or too weak to do anything about it. I think when I start hearing about him being involved in the conspiracy to kill John F. Kennedy, my first thought was, then why do you run and hide in the bathroom of Air Force One for like an hour and a half or 2 hours or however long he was hiding in the bathroom? A lot of people don't realize he did that, but he did. He went and hid in the bathroom of the airplane because, I don't know what his motivation was, but he was hiding in the bathroom until he was discovered. So, that seems to me more like somebody who is a victim of the circumstances and they themselves were afraid. That doesn't mean there is no conspiracy to kill Kennedy. It just means that... I think it's giving Johnson too much credit to put him as a part of it and not just a dupe or a bystander. He may have been aware of it, but I don't think he was like a mastermind or anything.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com. That's why we're very upset about freedomfiends.cz. Freedomfiends.cz is a Liberty Media archive of Freedom Fiends material hosted in the Czech Republic. Freedomfiends.cz is outside the jurisdiction of the Watchers, who employ me, the Central Scrutinizer, to keep you from hearing things that might make you think. My fellow scrutinizers and I do not want you to visit freedomfiends.cz. Do not visit freedomfiends.cz.
Okay, so now I've rambled on. I didn't get to add in the clips with about Ron Paul. I didn't get to add in the clips about Kai. So, or you know, with Kai as my co-host. So, anyway, there we go. That'll be the conspiracy podcast for this week. And that's the one that's going to get run on LRN until I make another podcast. Folks, for more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com. And we rarely here at badquaker.com do any of us talk about conspiracy theories. So this is a very unusual podcast. Thank you very much for listening, folks.